Welcome to Office Hours with Adam Peterson, where I talk to business owners, employees, entrepreneurs and experts to find answers to those day-to-day questions about life and work in Luxembourg. If you have questions you'd like answered, let me know at adam.peterson@rtl.lu or on LinkedIn. But for now, on to today's show. Of course, the self-employed should work from home 2 days a week, Saturday and Sunday. I think credit to this should go for a previous guest, Darren Robinson, who posted a meme along these lines on LinkedIn. Today we are talking about self-employment. What are the benefits? Is it the ultimate inflexibility? Do you never get the chance to switch off, as Darren's meme suggested? And do you award yourself Employee of the Month every month? To answer these questions and more, I'm joined by Alexandra Neves of Mindtree Coaching. Welcome, Alexandra.
Thank you.
Nico Viscor-Conter of Visualize Impact.
Thank you.
And Laurin Suputro, Head of Public Policy for Vault.
Thanks for having me.
Good. So let me just quickly point out that we have someone who's a bit of an odd one out. So Laurin, you're not self-employed.
I am not.
You work for Vault and you're involved in public policy and understand employment law.
That's right. I'll lead the engagement with policymakers on topics such as platform work, self-employment and so forth.
Great, because I don't know that much around this topic and I'm really interested to know. You can jump in and ask questions that I don't know that I should be asking. Let's start with Nico. So Visualize Impact, what does it do?
Visualize Impact is a business that is aiming to be kind of a middle ground between a marketing agency and a freelancer when it comes to marketing. So something I found when I moved back to Luxembourg was that for SMEs and startups, there's not really a lot of choice when it comes to marketing. You can either go to a marketing agency that's going to give you some good results but charge you a lot of money and maybe lock you into a very strict contract, or you can go to a freelancer that's going to have a lot of flexibility in terms of pricing, in terms of work, but it's probably going to give you, like, you're not sure what the quality of the work you're going to get, right?
So you're going to hit that middle ground.
Exactly. So I kind of positioned myself as a middle ground between the two to offer a more affordable marketing service, especially the visual aspect of marketing, because a lot of marketing agencies focus a lot on the, I guess, strategic aspect. So I only do the visual part.
Okay.
So I have background in 3D and in graphic design. That also helps me making some different types of content. And I work with companies on branding, on social media communication, product showcase as well, and more recently events as well, to give them highest quality visuals they can have.
So that's what you do. We'll work out how you got there very shortly. Yeah. So Alex, you do a few things, don't you?
I do a few things.
So tell me what you do. Yes. Tell me about Mindtree Coaching and then some of your side hustles.
Yes. So Mindtree Coaching is a professional coaching and soft skills training company. We give trainings for companies, for ISBLs, and for individuals on effective communication, effective feedback, self-development, overcoming imposter syndrome, stopping self-sabotage, all those topics.
Okay, so soft skills mainly for executive workers. Okay. And then tell me about your side
hustle. I also have my hobby. I'm an amateur stand-up comedian.
Does that bring in money at all?
It brings some tips. So sometimes I get like tip $20 per
set. So maybe that might grow then as part of your share of your business.
Thinking as an entrepreneur, if I get 40 euros for a 5-minute set, my hourly rate is amazing.
Yeah. Definitely more than minimum wage. You don't want to diminish the tip, so you still want
No. Tip your comedians.
Let's understand then how you got into those roles. So I want to start with you, Alex. Tell me a bit about your personal story and how you chose to go self-employed.
So I worked in training and development in big companies for more than 20 years. I love training. I love developing people. I love coaching. But working in bigger companies, the decision-making process was hardly my own. Someone decided which projects we needed to invest in, which projects were put on the shelf. If the ministries changed, we needed to shelve some projects and prioritize others.
So, for example, at the moment, if you were an American company that's getting pushed by Trump not to do certain sorts of training, that would be frustrating to you because you wanted to train on the things that you think are important.
Absolutely.
So you were doing that in the big company. You start to get a bit frustrated that you wanted to work on what you wanted to work on.
So I was, when I did my coaching certification in 2015. I was also doing some trainings on the sides. And then in 2020, the coaching and personal development market really exploded because people were at home. Everything was done by Zoom, so it gave more flexibility than having to go to a therapist or a coach.
Suddenly the cost of getting in contact with your customer was eliminated.
Absolutely.
So, okay.
Yes.
And the coaching certificate you did your previous employer pay for that? Or was
no.
that, you did that yourself?
I did it myself. I'm an International Coaching Federation accredited coach, and I am currently also the president of the International Coaching Federation.
So you
were
doing that on the side, and you thought about this was planning for the future, and then COVID hit, and then that was the time to go.
So I incorporated in 2021 as a side business, and I kept doing it as a side business until last year. Today, it's my 1 year anniversary of being fully self-employed.
And was there any conflict when you were doing it as a side hustle?
No. I made sure to have a written agreement addendum to the contract from my previous employer to do the coaching on the side, and what kind of clients I could go after, what kind of clients I couldn't go after, to really avoid conflicts of interest.
Nico, you're a lot younger than me. You're near the start of your career. Tell me about your personal journey and how you've ended up being self-employed.
Yeah, so I think going independent and self-employed was, I think, a no-brainer for me. I grew up being raised by two entrepreneurs, kind of does that to you. It's gonna definitely influence. And also I think moving a lot also kind of forces you into that a bit more. I mean, I'm from Luxembourg, but I grew up in Monaco in the US, so I had to learn to adapt, and I think that's a skill that you
like the cookie cutter third country Luxembourg kid, right? That's just moved around and choose
yes.
international.
Okay. I've always been very proud of being from Luxembourg, but I don't speak the language. I can understand it a bit. But I think the journey to entrepreneurship and to self-employment kind of started there. Even actually my first job out of college in the US was a marketing firm. But because it was COVID times, there was a lot more remote jobs than in-person jobs. I ended up actually starting my career working remotely from my home office. So naturally, I think even from the get-go, the first company I worked for, it was technically already kind of like self-employment a little bit.
But given it was remote work, that then opens the opportunity to remote work for lots more companies. You have less stress because you're getting a salary every month. You're not needing to sell to put food on the table. Why did you not carry on being a remote worker for another company?
I think I missed, the flexibility a little bit. I think you talked about it a bit, but I think the flexibility of, you know, being able to choose a bit the projects that you work on, being able to have more flexible hours, because I was working remotely, but I had a certain set of hours I had to do, or, you know, every week you had your boss that comes and says, okay, this is the list of projects I want you to do this week. Whereas now, being self-employed, you're able to kind of pick and choose, okay, this week I want to work on just this project or that project. Obviously, the more projects, the better. And I think that's one of the struggles of being self-employed, is to find projects at the beginning when you're just starting. But to me, it offered that flexibility that I don't think any full-time, I guess, more corporate regular job would be able to give me. And that's where I sort of went in that direction.
Yeah. Lauren, have you ever been self-employed?
I have not, no.
You've not been tempted?
I've been doing some student jobs in the past, you know, working as a bartender and so forth, and some gigs and catering in the catering industry. So these have been my, let's say, a few solo experiences.
Yeah. So I thought about it when I moved here. So I moved here for my wife and Natasha's job. And then I took a year off and I thought about working for myself. And I realized that the problem I was walking into wasn't a content problem. Having something to sell wasn't the hard thing. The problem was actually selling it. Mm-hmm. And it was a marketing problem. And I made the decision, I want this for more flexibility, but I'm going to have to work even harder doing this job than I would being employed. So then I decided and went back to the corporate world. Mm-hmm. What would you recommend to me? Good decision, bad decision?
I think, good and bad, I would say. There's some good, there's some bad. I think going into self-employment takes guts. It's a lot of pressure that you have on your shoulders, because at the end of the day, you're the one responsible for putting food on the table and taking care of the bills. And so it adds a certain level of pressure, but at the same time, it offers you flexibility. And for me, I think it, in a way, felt liberating to go independent. I don't know how it was for you, but for me, that's how it felt. And that's, for me, the, I would say the pro that made me go into that direction, as opposed to maybe all the cons and stress and worries that come with it.
That's why I took so long to go from a salaried job with a side gig to full-time entrepreneur, because I wanted to make sure that I had a comfortable portfolio of clients or prospects or leads that would allow me to keep putting food on the table.
Mm-hmm. And you've got...
Yes, I have three kids.
Wow. And you don't have any.
No.
So the you're under more pressure, I guess, to put food on the table. And with that, I don't want to go into too much personal stuff, but are you with a partner? Do they have?
Yeah, so my husband has a salary job now. A few years ago, it was the other way around. He was an entrepreneur and I had a full-time job. And so we balance each other out. We take turns being entrepreneurs.
That's actually what happened for myself. Yeah. And when we moved here and Natasha became the salary job, I felt like a world of weight was lifted on my shoulder, actually. And she's described after being here that she felt a load of weight come onto her shoulders. So I think if you are fortunate enough to be in a relationship where people, I think it does provide an opportunity.
Would you say, like, with what you're describing, entrepreneurship can be hard, but it's also rewarding.
Yeah.
What's your main driver to continue on that path? And do you feel like this is entrepreneurship for everyone? Is freelancing, is self-employment for everyone?
I would say no, because I think not everyone can deal with the, I guess it's more the mental pressure, I think, is what's hardest when you're an entrepreneur, because you have to know, okay, if the business doesn't go well during this month, then that affects me directly. You know, if you're working in a corporate job, if maybe you have a small underperformance, that may not affect you at all in your paycheck and in your monthly outcome. When you're an entrepreneur, when you're self-employed, and especially more when you are just by yourself as opposed to with a team, which is, I think, both our cases, that even more is an effect. You know, if I have a month where I maybe don't get as many clients, then I know that month is going to be a bit harder. And I think it's important. I think you talked about having support. I think it's important to have that support to help with that. I think if you are going into it without any support, it's a bit tougher. For me, I'm lucky that I have both my parents who, when I came back to Luxembourg and I looked into going self-employed, said to me, listen, if you want to do this, we'll support you and we'll support your decision for, you know, a couple of years for you to be able to give it this try. And for me, that gave me the final confidence to go and try it. I think if I had not been given that support, I probably wouldn't have jumped in.
There's a scalability risk in this as well, isn't there? So one reason you went to be self-employed is so you could work on what you want and you can take the risk of having a little bit less food on the table. Mm-hmm. If you're super successful, and then you start employing more people, then you re-incur that cost of having to provide for people. So what's your plan for the company?
I mean, that's the goal. I would love to have a team eventually, but I've always told myself, I think as long as I don't need a team, I'm going to keep doing it on my own. Mm-hmm. If I have, you know, enough clients that I can do everything myself, you know, if I know that I can work on one project every week and I can have four projects a month, then I know that, you know, I don't need a team. But as soon as I have maybe more demand, then having a team starts to make sense. And for me, that's my goal. I want to start just by myself, but my goal is to be able to grow into having a team, because that's ultimately what I like about it, is to be able to have that sort of management position in the end.
I think for your type of work, Alex, so you have a scalable approach there because you probably have other coaches. If Mindtree Coaching got a big contract where you needed more people, you could then call another self-employed
right? Partner with other people. I have that on the table now for a big team building project, that if I win that project, I will bring in a co-trainer to facilitate that with me. But I have no projects of building a team and becoming the employer.
I
just want to keep
having your control and being accountable to yourself.
Yes.
Great. So now we know something about our self-employed entrepreneurs. We'll take a quick break and come back for some of the Tuwir questions. This episode of Office Hours is sponsored by the delivery platform Volt, bringing you delicious food and whatever you need to your home or office in 30 minutes. Try Volt today with the discount code OfficeHours, in one word, all capitals, for 50% off on your first purchase with Volt. Download the app in the App Store or go to volt.com. Bon appetit. The science is inconclusive. One study declared, the long-term cardiovascular disease risk and mortality of self-employed individuals seem to be higher than those of white-collar employees. Whilst another noted, the observed higher scores in self-rated health and workability among self-employed. Although the second study said self-rated, so I'm not really sure if people were just trying to convince themselves that we're better off being self-employed. Links to the papers are in the show notes so you can check it out yourselves, but I want to return to our unscientific sample size of two and ask, do you feel being self-employed is better or worse for your health?
Oh, I feel it's better in the sense where I have more time for self-care. I eat better. I am happier overall. I feel more in control and empowered in my professional decisions. I am a lot more mindful of what my body is telling me. So if I sneeze, I will slow down. And
it's interesting you say about mental health. One of the causes of burnout, the research says, is lack of control and Absolutely. Not having autonomy. That autonomy helps you feel better Yes. as a self-employed.
I'm going to take maybe a more measured take on this one. I think in a way, yes, it does provide you more opportunities to practice self-care. To, you know, you can decide, okay, if I want to, I like biking. If I want to go biking at noon or in the middle of the afternoon, I can do that. I can try to organize my day and be able to do some activities, practice some self-care when I want. But at the same time, I also think for me that the where I think the health takes a toll by going independent is the mental health pressure. You know, knowing that you have your bills to pay, that you have certain costs on top. Because, you know, when you're working in corporate, you have your salary. You don't think about all the yeah. things that are coming out of that salary that you don't necessarily notice. But here you pay for it, so you notice it a bit more, right?
Yeah, and coming back to what we were saying before, if entrepreneurship is for everyone, I think if you have the kinds of personality where that risk of will I be able to pay my bills motivates you to hustle and go out there and search for more clients, then entrepreneurship can be for you mm-hmm. because you have the personality of a go-getter.
I want to bring Lauren in here. When you're working for yourself as well, then if you're sick, you're not getting any money in, right?
Yeah.
If people go self-employed, do they lose part of the social security benefits? What's mm-hmm. kind of the employment situation for self-employed people versus employees?
Yeah, we do see across Europe that the social safety net has basically been designed around the traditional employment model. And that is why when people want to be self-employed, oftentimes the reaction is, oh, that's rather risky. And that's a conversation that we want to have with policymakers. Like, can we work towards a social safety net that actually gives people the freedom to decide whether to be self-employed, to be employed? We just heard like there's a lot of upsides and downsides and people should decide for themselves what they want to do. But in terms of access to social benefits, to social security, we believe that we need reforms to make sure that everyone can basically choose the best option for him or herself in that.
Yeah, so we had Edgar on an earlier episode who's a courier for mm-hmm. Volt, and he was saying how Volt gave him the opportunity to work here, bring some money in after arriving, whilst it between jobs before he searched for another job. You're an advocate for the flexibility and also policy that provides flexibility for that type of work.
Yes, mm-hmm. correct.
Absolutely. When I was looking at memes for research purposes for this episode, there were lots about expecting a tax rebate as a self-employed person, and then getting a tax bill because you were self-employed. How is the paperwork? Is it a minefield of bureaucracy?
So far, I found it pretty easy. So I'm independent. I don't have a company. I'm just independent. Okay. From the European Union, I've been in Luxembourg for 18 years. When I created the company, it was through my guichet, and it was easy. But I think it differs. Yeah. I have a friend from outside of Europe who struggled a lot more with creating all the paperwork necessary.
Yeah, so when I thought about going self-employed, I needed to do effectively the same sort of paperwork that you needed to do when you were asked for citizenship. So like 10 years of criminal records yes. checks, proof that you've never been bankrupt, I think, is one of mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. So you found it easy. You're Portuguese, EU-based. Yeah. Are you Luxembourgish citizen as well?
Not yet.
Nico, you're Luxembourgish. Yep. Was it easy for you?
Well, I still had to go through all of what you mentioned. I had to, because I didn't live in Luxembourg, I mean, really, I moved back in 2022 and... Before that, I would come on holiday to see my family and things like that. But yeah, because of that, I had to provide, you know, criminal record, proof that, you know, I had to go sign to a notary to sign a declaration that I had not, you know, defaulted a company or something like that. So it is a very intensive process. I mean, there are, I think, resources to help with that process, but I still find it a bit difficult when you don't know where to look. I think that's the for me the biggest problem is that if you don't know exactly what type of form you need, then
you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So how does the level of bureaucracy in Luxembourg compare to other countries?
I mean, we do have the two freelancers entrepreneurs here with us. So in Luxembourg, it is possible. I think the system. So the system basically favors those entrepreneurs that. Are high income in demand professions that can cope with the level of bureaucracy and incur the costs that, you know, time investments and financial investments that go into the process. So if we compare that to other countries, we do see that the red tape, if you want to say that, is rather high. And we see that in countries where the hurdles and the bureaucracy is minimal, we also see that many freelancers then also tend to work part-time, really see it as a side hustle, a side gig. Because obviously, if you invest a lot of time into the processes to set up, to become an entrepreneur, then after you have done all that, you obviously will invest all your time in actually recouping those investments.
Yeah, so this is the argument for lowering the red tape, is if you make the bureaucracy lower, more people will go into the workforce and they'll create economic value, which at the moment people are leaving on the table because it's too difficult.
Absolutely. I think at the end of the day, it's about providing opportunities. We definitely see the need for processes that need to be in place. It's about really finding the balance. How can we actually find regulation that sets ground rules while at the same time offer people the opportunity to come on the labor market and work as freelancers?
Alex, you were saying that you had a friend who was not an EU national, so a third country national.
Yeah, he had to go to the notary for the bankruptcy document. There's more red tape, and I had already done my diplomas registration in Luxembourg too, so that was also something that it was very easy because I just had to direct my guichet.
But what I didn't realize, I thought it was the country of origin, but then what you were saying, Nico, is it's the fact that you lived abroad.
It's the fact that you haven't lived here for 10 years straight.
That's why I had to go through all that process as well, is because not having lived here, I didn't have all those documents.
And you talked about help from the government. So how's entrepreneurship? Have they been?
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky enough that someone recommended a workshop at the House of Entrepreneurship that they do. It was an online workshop where they basically kind of explain to you the different documents that you need to submit, the different steps. And it was helpful because, you know, it's like a pre-recorded session where they go through all the information where you can find it. And then they have a person that's there that can answer questions if you have any. So that was interesting because it gave me sort of a list of what I should do. But again, if I hadn't been recommended this workshop, then the information, I don't know where I would have found it.
But that's interesting because if you also, like, I think that is reflected in the statistics, the recent numbers that I saw that on self-employment. I think Luxembourg has around 8% of self-employed compared to a 14% average across the EU. So there's still some work to be done. Of course, at the end of the day, it's the choice of individuals to go to do entrepreneurship or not. But I think it's quite interesting, and that actually matches, like, with the entry hurdles. You see, like, how many people actually then become actual self-employed in the end.
You probably need to get yourselves with the House of Entrepreneurship, Lauren, and give them a training course of how to fast track this, all the steps you need to do to become a platform worker and work for Volt. I'm going to finish with one question for our self-employed entrepreneurs. What would it take to get you to leave your self-employed status and convert to being a wage slave?
Oh, wow. A very big wage, a very small company, and a lot of autonomy on how to choose the projects I work in, because that's what I would have more trouble letting go of, is the freedom to choose.
Freedom, okay.
Mm. Yeah, I would say similar, but I would also add, I think something I like, you know, with being self-employed is I'm also very involved in nonprofits. Mm. And I have to travel a lot for the nonprofits, at least currently. And so being self-employed gives me that flexibility to also, if I need to go to a conference for that nonprofit, then I can do that and still work on something, you know, while also being on the go. So it provides a bit of flexibility if you need to move for, you know, a few days and not be in your home office, you can still continue working. And I think that's something that in a corporate job is harder to find. There's some companies that I think give you good remote options, but not all.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of them are pushing to come back to a more traditional model post-COVID. So it's a bit harder.
This is another side to you that maybe we might even explore on a later episode, Nico. The nonprofit, what's the nonprofit you're involved in?
It's called Junior Chamber International. And it's basically an organization where we try to help develop leaders, young leaders. So it's you can only be a member when you're 18 to 40. And the idea is you work on community projects. So we do a lot of projects around entrepreneurship in Luxembourg, especially. But it's a nonprofit that basically gets young leaders together. And a lot of people are kind of in corporate jobs. And actually, I think in Luxembourg, we're maybe three entrepreneurs in the association, in the nonprofit. So
excellent.
So hopefully that number can grow.
I think I've just set up an episode for the next series of Office Hours. So, but unfortunately we're out of time today. So all that is left for me is to say thanks to the guests. Alex, so thank you to you. How would people get in contact if they wanted to find out more?
Through LinkedIn or my website, mindtreecoaching.lu.
Okay, Nico?
Yeah, same thing, LinkedIn and my website, visualizeimpact.pro.
Yeah, but there's one problem with that. So it's visualize with a Z, right?
Yes.
So it's spelled in the American way.
Yes.
Okay. No comment.
10 years in the US, we'll do that.
No comment. Larry?
LinkedIn.
Okay, thank you. So that's all that's left for me to do is say thank you to the listeners.